Okay, so Moose is up right now, so...
Oh, jeez. Okay, I'm going to pull it up on my phone, just in case, if this is the moment.
I think they have a righty on the mound, so that helps.
Oh, my. Okay.
Ball one low.
2-0. Okay.
Oh!
Oh, oh, there it is!
Oh!
There it is! Oh, shit!
He did it! He did it! He did it!
Oh, my God!
Woo! He freaking did
it! It's finally over! Oh, my Lord!
Perfect! He did it!
Wow. We could not have planned that better if we wanted to. Oh, my God. And we have it all recorded.
We do.
Bye-bye, Balboni. Oh, my God.
He did it. He freaking did it. That's cool. That's about freaking time.
Glad I got to see it. Holy crap.
Yeah.
I haven't been watching many games recently, and I'm always like, oh, what if I miss it?
That's cool.
Well, now we got something to talk about.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to a very special edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, almost live as we, I mean, it was live as we recorded, but just we almost just started the show. And so before we jump into anything, we have to recount what happened. You probably heard it. I think we're going to put our reactions at the front of the show, so you probably already heard it. But good Lord, we were just sitting here talking about how – we talked about it today. We sent an email. I've had a shitty day. My car's in the shop. My daughter was sick on the ride home. It was a rough day, very stressful. And we were talking about it by email today, how amazing it would be if Moose just – I feel like it's just for me at this point. If he did it, it'd make me feel better. And as soon as we started recording, getting ready for the show, it was Moose's turn at bat. He'd already had a really good night. And as did many Royals, they're winning 13-0 right now. So I pulled it up on my phone. And haven't been able to watch too many games recently, and I've been worried about it. What if I miss it? I don't actually get to see it live. And oh my God, of all the instances, all the at bats, all the games, this is the one we're recording. I pulled it up on my phone. Here we are. It's all over, folks. Mike Moustakas is the Royals single season home run record holder. It is finally gone. 32 years later, 37 home runs. In 2017 for Mike Moustakas. Folks, wow. I don't know what else to say. I'm flabbergasted. I'm speechless. We knew it would happen. We thought we knew it would happen. And then we started doubting things. There's only about a week left of the season now, and we didn't know if it was actually going to occur. And now it's happened. Our long national nightmare is over. Mike, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, when he finished August with 35, it was a foregone conclusion. And he was at 34 for so long that it seemed so obvious that he was going to break this record. And, you know, just the circumstances didn't quite work out. He had, you know, obviously last year he hurt his knee, you know, major ACL injury. He's played pretty close to every game this year. I mean, quite a lot of games for a guy of his build and conditioning on a reconstructed knee. So it's been pretty sore for the last few weeks. And so he homered on September 1st, which was actually my niece's birthday. So, you know, she's seen two Moustakas home runs now. So, and, you know, now we're on the 20th. So it took him that much time to hit that one home run to get over in the hump. And, you know, he'd been going the other way with a lot of pitches. He had, I mean, he'd been hitting a few pretty hard, but mostly on line drives, mostly, you know, without the depth you would expect. Earlier tonight, he hit a double the opposite way that went about a third up the wall, or was right up against the wall. And it looked kind of like he got it. And then finally here in the sixth inning, boom, you know, just a no doubter, which is kind of the fun way to do it, because you can see the swing and take it all in. And number 37, you know, he finally did it. The record has finally been broken. Balboni has been defeated. The Balboni homer demon vanquished.
And vanquished.
Royals have an all-time single season home run record now. It's pretty cool. Now he just needs to get to the 40. Which,
yeah, if he can just, now that this pressure is off, if he can just go on a tear on this final week of the season and pop out three more, I'm down. I'm good. I'm good with that if that's what happens.
He had a day off on Sunday, and they were off on Monday traveling to Toronto. And he did look better yesterday, and he looked better today. So maybe it's just that rest. And now that he's finally broken it, maybe there's an opportunity that he's just going to be a lot more loose and able to just go for it. If that's the case, you know, it might be something where, like he's done before, where he just rattles off a bunch of home runs in a week. You know,
yeah.
He could get to 40. Another cool thing, and this is from Dave Leske on Twitter, with the caveat that, you know, if you just pretend that Dayton Moore had nothing to do with 2006 in the draft, where the Royals took Luke Hochaver first overall, which, you know, the company line is he wasn't involved.
Yes.
Because he had just taken over, which, okay.
Okay, yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure. First over, yeah. Anyway, yeah. That's an urban legend for another day. But if you go with that company line, that means that Mike Moustakas was the first draft pick of Dayton Moore's tenure, and he just broke the 32-year-old record. So that's pretty
Maybe the last great thing that this whole wave of prospects, if you will have accomplished.
Yeah. I mean, at this stage,
there's no playoffs this year, so they're not going to win another pennant or another World Series. And pretty much all that's left was this.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Hosmer's got a good batting average, but he's in a league with Jose Altuve. It's like the you have to put the Tony Gwynn filter on it, pretty much.
Exactly.
Where it's 90% just like, you're just not gonna get him.
Yeah, 90% of seasons he would probably be you know, in the competition until the last day for winning a batting title, but in a year like this, I mean, what's Altuve batting at this point? Like
350 something. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. Hosmer was third as of yesterday when I looked at it, which is still good. You know, hitting in the 320s with the shot at 25 plus home runs that's not bad for a contract year. So
yeah.
Well, neither is 37 homers.
Well, because I remember, let's see, what was the year Miguel Cabrera, when he won the Triple Crown, like his batting average wasn't like obscenely high.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like for guys to win that, you would think that they would have really high batting average. But even in a lot of cases, it's not. Like, I think George Brett in 1990 won it with like 319 or something.
Yeah,
I shouldn't
have it
off the top of my head, but I don't.
Right. In 2012, Cabrera had a 330 batting average. So
yeah. Which is positive. Good, is that, but it's
yeah, it's good. Attainable. But it's not like a Ted Williams type line, which is what you normally think for winning a batting title, you know. But
yeah.
So 323 for Hosmer, I mean, he's right there. But I feel stuff like that always kind of reminds me. There was, let's see, I want to say it was 2005-ish. I think the Chargers. I can't remember who it was. But team went 4-12 and had the number one pick in the NFL draft. And then the Chiefs in 2008 went 2-14 and had the third pick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, like how many times are you, and I'm sure I'd have to go back and compare records, but like when the you know, we talk about Moose, and he was a second pick in that draft. Like, how close were they? You know, how many years would that record that they had that year been worth the number one pick in the draft, where they could have taken a David Price? You know, so neither here nor there, but just always kind of interesting when you see stuff like that. You know, in any normal or any other given year, you know, Hosmer is just a few hits away, you know, a hot couple of games and away from possibly winning the title. But it's not going to happen. So
no, I can't even imagine. He'd have to basically get a hit for the next 11 games in every at bat, and Altuve would have to go
15 or something.
And Altuve would have to hit like 200. I mean, maybe it's not that extreme, but it might as well be, because, you know, at this stage, when you've got 600 at bats, you're not going to make up 25 points in batting average easily. I mean, it's you know, so. But it's a neat footnote. You know, the Royals get someone hitting into the 320s, which is kind of nice. And it's Hosmer, so that's, you know.
Well, we were talking about it before the show, before Moose, before the show, and talking about how we when you look back through the years, we've seen pieces of what Eric Hosmer was supposed to be. And by that, I mean, you know, there was a player that everyone had in mind, that MVP caliber, 20, 25, 30 home run player, 330 type hitter. So, you know, you go back to, 2013, go back to 2015, you know, he's batting 300, a little over, but the power wasn't there. He didn't even have 20 home runs in those seasons. And then you had 2016, where he had 25 home runs, first time he'd broken 20, but he was only hitting 266, you know, so he never, you know, he'd shown the flashes, shown the pieces, you know, had a 363 on base percentage in 2015, like all these kind of pieces of the player that we thought he was going to be. Just didn't quite put them all together in the same season, and now, boom, here we are, and he's hitting 323, 390, almost a 400 on base. When was the last time a Royals player came this close to a 400 on base percentage this season? Over 500 slugging, so almost a 900 OPS, with 24 home runs and 87 RBIs. I mean, there's a good chance he ends the season again with 25 home runs. Probably will fall short of the 100 RBIs unless he gets super hot. Very circumstantially.
That's a good way to put it.
But you know, it's been a fantastic season for Eric Hosmer, and excuse me, unfortunately kind of lost in the royal coaster, if you will, that this season has been, and in, you know, some of the other storylines that have happened, mostly negative, unfortunately, except for today's storyline of Mike Moustakas. My balloons are long deflated, but they're here in spirit. They're falling upon me now. The confetti is raining down. It's a joyous day in Royal Land. The great Balboni Homer Demon has finally been slain. I'm a happy man. I'm a happy Royals fan. You know, 5 years ago, there are things that I would have told you that I'm resigned to just never seeing. Royals in the playoffs, Royals winning a pennant, Royals winning a World Series, and the Balboni home run record being broken. And 5 years later, here we are. I've seen all of those things in my life. My fandom is secure. It's I have seen that which I need to see.
There is one more step that Moustakas could go after if you wanted to continue to keep a chase going, and that is the Major League Kansas City record for home runs in a season, which you'll remember the Athletics were in Kansas City in the 50s and 60s, and Bob Serve in 1958 hit 38 home runs, which is kind of weird. He did that at the age of 33. The previous year he hit 11 home runs. The following year he hit 20. 20 was the only – he hit 20 home runs in a season twice in his life. And one of them happened to be 38 home runs.
Of course.
So I don't know what was going on in 1958, but Bob Serve hit a few out. So Moustakas is one away from tying that record, and then two from surpassing that. So, you know, if you wanted to watch something over the next, 11 games of the season, you know, that's something else. So plus the chase for 40. So if he gets 40, obviously, then – then he passes serve. So,
right.
So, yeah. So that'll be that's something else to kind of keep an eye on if you're interested in the citywide record, I guess. I don't know what the T-Bones record is,
for
so
whatever
I'm not
going
to look that up. So
I don't know either. Probably, I don't know that it would be all that comparable, to be honest.
I can't imagine it would be. So I'm not going to worry about it.
Yep, nor should you.
I really
should. Only thing you should be worried about is how we're going to celebrate this this important milestone in Royals history.
I don't really know what to do now.
I don't either. What do I do with my hands? I don't know.
It's like all this time, and now what? It's like
now all this time, and it's finally. Oh, the Royals just tweeted. Balboni has a special message for Mike Moustakas. Oh man, if only they would have played this on the Jumbotron.
I knew they were going to do that. So is the account the actual thing then, or are they going to do it when he gets back?
Is it, what do you mean?
On the tweet, is it the actual message or?
Yes, yes. Video is Balboni.
Sweet.
He even says, I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did. We all are, Steve. We all are. Oh, my Lord.
Steve Balboni. Steve Balboni. Let's take a minute to appreciate Steve Balboni. Just briefly.
Tip our hats. And, you know, he carved out a pretty decent, we kind of talked about this, career for himself. But, you know, it's the most memorable thing he did in his career was have that record for the Royals. And now it's –
yeah.
I guess I'm not an expert on Steve Balboni's career. I assume that's the most memorable thing because nobody says like, oh, yeah, do you also know that Steve Balboni did this?
That's pretty much it. He played for the New York Yankees, the Seattle Mariners, the Kansas City Royals, and the Texas Rangers. A lot of people will forget that he also was in spring training in 1994 with the Royals, but retired when he was not going to make the team. So just another little footnote. The Royals obviously won the World Series in 1985 when he set the record. It looks like that was the last time that a team won the World Series with a home run record season in their franchise history until 2001. So some people call that the original curse of the Balboni. He's currently an advanced scout for the Giants. As I think many people know that. I think he's been here for a couple of series before the Giants came to town, and obviously it was around during 2014 when the Royals faced the Giants. So that's what he's
indeed
doing. So he
and between 1984 and 1988, almost all of that time with the Royals, he was traded in 88 to Seattle. But in almost all that time with the Royals, he had 140 home runs in 663 games over the course of five seasons. So he almost averaged 30 home runs a year in that stretch. So, I mean, you know, for that period of time, that was a pretty pretty good little stretch run he had for helping out the Royals there. Helping him win the World Series, make a couple playoff appearances. So hats off to you, Steve Balboni. And I am – unfortunately, I'm happy to say that your reign is over. It was long. It was deserved on your part. But the time – that chapter has closed.
Right.
And now here we are. The Mike Moustakas' reign has begun. See how long this one lasts. Hopefully not nearly as long.
Yeah,
please,
if it'd be another 32 years, that would be 2049.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is...
That is not something that we want to see.
No, I'll be very old. I'll be retired by then.
Yes, one can hope anyway.
Oh, I hope so, yeah. Please.
I don't even know if the world will survive itself long enough for 2049 to happen.
Well, it's supposed to end on the 23rd of this
month. Oh, that's
month,
right, this
so
weekend. So it's a good thing Moose got that home run in there.
Yeah, or else that would have been really embarrassing.
Yeah, now we could. Now I can truly die a happy man.
Maybe,
once this,
maybe that's why the world ends. The revenge of the Balboni homer demon.
That could be.
He's been angry and stirred from his slumber.
Yeah, we thought it was weakened, but now it's stronger than ever.
I guess we'll see. So if we don't record next week, that's why, because the world ended.
Yes, the world ended. So
sorry.
if you're wondering where the Kansas City Baseball Vault recording is next week, you should probably be more worried about where the canned goods are. Yes. Pro tip. So there we go. So, wow. What a start to the show. Right. I don't know how we followed that up, really, to be honest with you.
I really don't. I actually don't know how we followed that up.
But we're going to try.
Yeah.
We're going to try. So first, we'll talk about – let's talk about Danny Duffy. Okay. So he's returned.
Yes.
And I'm going to pull up his stats here so we can get some game log info.
Yeah, pretty good start. Was on a pitch count and was actually quite efficient with his pitches. And not only that, but got a lot of strikeouts too. So pretty good to see. Five innings pitched, gave up just one hit. It was a two-run home run.
So these things happen.
That's a bummer. But struck out eight, didn't walk any. You know, I think that's pretty okay. Main thing is he came away with it without any additional pain. There's no, I mean, he's not going to get shut down. We're going to see him at least. I think the schedule lines up for him to get maybe two more starts. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's tough at this point because the Royals, I think even if they win every game, they still need help. So they're not mathematically out of the playoff hunt, but they're more or less out of it. So I don't know. It's an awkward position because now, you know, the main thing is just watching, hey, how does Danny Duffy finish the year? How do Jake Junis and Sam Gavilio and Scott Alexander and some of these guys that emerged this year, how do they finish things up? So Duffy getting back and pitching well and with no pain and efficiently, is it a good sign for, you know, what might be heading next year? So, you know, that was good. Unfortunately, the Royals lost that game, but, you know, Duffy pitched well with the exception of one batter. So there's not a lot to complain about there.
Yeah. You know, and if you look back, obviously, there's quite a bit of a gap in there because of the he being out for a couple of weeks. But his last five starts, he's had 28 innings pitched, and he has 39 strikeouts in those 28 innings. So that's pretty solid. Contrasting that to his previous six games before that, where he only had one game with more than six strikeouts, you know, so there was some concern there, or even if you go back to seven games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was some concern there about with how Duff, obviously, you know, find out, well, at least he's not quite 100% healthy, and maybe that was a piece of it. But with the strikeout numbers, you know, and even going back a little bit further, you know, they weren't exactly as high as people were kind of hoping this season after last season when his numbers kind of ticked up a little bit from his career average. So it's good to see that part returning to his game a little bit. Hopefully, you know, the low strikeouts was because he wasn't quite 100% healthy and there were some, you know, some nagging issues. But if he can, I mean, eight strikeouts on 62 pitches in five innings, I mean, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty tough to, you know, usually if you throw a lot of strikeouts, you're throwing a lot of pitches. And he went, you know, he was on his 70 pitch limit. So to get eight strikeouts, pretty good. And it was against Cleveland. They're a good offensive team. And he was able to handle them with, again, the exception of the one batter. So, yeah, I think that's a good rebound for him. We'll see how the last couple starts go. The Royals are going to go with the six-man rotation to finish the year out, which is an interesting way to go. I think that Jason Vargas, we've seen clearly, was hitting a lot of walls, not just a wall, but
yes,
multiple. It's kind of like that show Breakout or whatever. What is it? What's the one with the – You have to conform to the shape of the wall.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Wipe out. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, it sounds about
you
right.
You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah,
it's
well,
like
if you were to imagine the Kool-Aid Man busting through the brick wall, but instead of busting through the brick wall, he comes up against it and shatters like a glass pitcher full of Kool-Aid.
Vargas did that basically all the second
that
half.
Would be Vargas, yes.
Yeah, until his last start. And so an extra day of rest should help him. Kennedy looked pretty good in his last start with an extra day of rest. He did give up some runs and did leave the game early, but it's you know, it's they're just going to get through the season. You know, I don't know if Jason Vargas will be on this team next year. Probably not, but Kennedy's definitely going to be opting back in. So they don't really have much reason to push these guys, especially if they're not pitching effectively. You know, right now, Sam Gaviglio, who we talked about a couple weeks ago, who had been claimed, he actually has had a couple of good starts with the Royals and looks like somebody who may have a role next year. He's got a lot of team control. This is, I think, his first big league season. So, you know, to see him come out and have a couple of effective appearances, you know, maybe that's something. Maybe it turns out to be nothing. But, you know, they get another couple looks at him. They get arrest some guys. They, you know, they're going to just be playing out the string. But, you know, you at least try to see the optimal performance for some of these guys going to a six-man rotation. And hopefully that also means that the bullpen doesn't get overworked because they've been basically on fumes pretty much for the last month and a half where they're just overworked. They're in weird situations. You get to where Kelvin Herrera is coming out of games in the middle of counts because of a forearm injury. And, you know, you're basically desperately trying to throw whatever reliever you can at whatever rally is up. And, you know, a lot of times it just hasn't gone well. And that's kind of been the story for the last 6-7 weeks. And that's a big reason why the Royals dropped out of the playoff race. So, you know, maybe it doesn't help them now, but they can at least finish strong. And, you know, I guess look to that homestand to be kind of the curtain call and maybe play well there and give the fans something to cheer about at least.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at this point, and it kind of feels like a little bit later than some of those years, obviously, where the Royals were down, but especially a little later than a lot of those years, but where, especially like talking that 2010 to 2012 phase where they were, you could tell they were kind of starting to be a better team, but the wins still weren't there. It was, okay, what are the storylines that we can look at? What are the things that we can maybe parse out of what remains of this season that we can look to and say, okay, here, you know, this is something that we can look at next year. So, you know, you brought up a ton of good things that we can keep our eye on and stuff, and we'll have more discussions on those as we get towards the off season. But as we're moving along now, getting towards that final stretch of games, you know, we look at Alex Gordon a little bit, and you know, he's here. He's going to be back next year. He's being paid too much money not to be back
right.
next year. But
sadly.
Sadly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Question mark? But, you know, he's been a little bit better of late. So if you look at, you know, obviously for the season, he's still betting. You're hitting just terribly. Just
yeah,
not good.
211. His but, OPS finally went over 605 or went over 600.
Hey!
So, and it was interesting because last night he hit a home run, which was actually the 5,694th home run of the season, which is a new major league record.
Royals setting home run records all over the place.
Just left and right. Weirdly enough, Gordon had the lowest slugging percentage among qualified hitters. So go figure. He's the one that hits the homer. But, yeah, I mean, he's hit 3 homers this month, 7 extra base hits. You know, he's looked a lot better. He's hitting the ball with more authority. He's been going the other way with a lot more pitches. And, you know, just looks a lot more like the guy that we're expecting and the guy we're used to seeing. And, you know, hopefully it's a positive that builds into next year because, you know, if they're going to have any shot at any kind of contention, he's going to have to be a big part of it. You know, you think about if you got even a 10% upgrade on what Gordon was all year, you know, that puts you in a position where you might win some of those games in April and August and some of those close ones in July. And, you know, he's just been consistently bad all year until this month. So, I mean, it's too little too late, but he'll be back and you'll take improvement where it comes, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you look back at, you know, starting his last 14 days, you know, his slash line is 341, 372, 634. So, and that's a total of 12 games that he's played in. And those three home runs you talk about that he's hit this month, those have been in the last 14 days. So, yeah. You know, it's pretty good to see that improvement. And, you know, even if you go back to the last 28 days for the last month, you start to see the Alex Gordon that we know. You know, he had a 271, 292, 471 line, so 763 OPS, and then he's hit five home runs in that period. Three home runs, not five, sorry. So just looking at his splits here. And so, I mean, you know, that's about more or less what you would expect from Alex Gordon for a season.
Right.
So the fact that he's only done it for 28 days is a little obviously as disconcerting as his whole season has been, but the fact that he has done it for 28 days says, okay, you know, there's maybe a little bit something left there that we didn't think, you know, a few weeks ago, and that if you just look at his line now or after the season, you're going to say, man, just a wasted year and you know, nothing good about it. But you know, maybe you can salvage a little bit by this last stretch of the season. And it's not just from the numbers, you know, the eye test, you know, Dave Lesky and some people were talking about it in the Baseball Prospectus chat, Slack chat today. He's looked better, you know, a little bit, you know, to the eye test. So it's, you know, hopefully, you know, still doesn't look completely right. And obviously, you know, the even though the numbers are better, you know, you still know something's missing, but hopefully there's enough that he could say, okay, I was able to correct some things. Took me longer than normal to get back into the groove, but I know what to do. I know how to do it. And then, you know, maybe you can carry that to next season. So, I mean, I'm reaching here. I'm fully aware
right.
of that fact. But, you know, I'm trying to find some bright spot for Alex Gordon because he's going to be back next year, you know. So there needs to be some bright spots for him. Otherwise, it's going to be a long, long season, which it still may very well be. Who knows? But, you know, it's good to see, you know, and you hate when, you know, you see it in all the sports and, you know, when a beloved son, if you will, of a team, you know, is beloved and then just kind of slowly tapers and falls off. And you saw it a bit with Mike Sweeney, and his numbers mm-hmm. didn't even decline as rapidly or as greatly as Gordon's did. But, you know, the injury troubles that he had later in his career with the Royals and some of the issues he had, you know, fans started to turn on him a little bit. He was making a lot of money for, you know, relatively speaking for the club then. He was making a lot of money and fans thought he should be playing more and producing more and they were upset. And so that sucked because Mike Sweeney's a great guy. He was a fantastic player for a lot of bad Royals teams. He definitely did not get as much credit as he did as an offensive player for that time period. You know, that was in the big home run era. He didn't hit as many home runs as, you know, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds and all those players that he was kind of competing against, if you will. So, you know, that was really unfortunate that he kind of got overlooked in that huge offensive era for as good of a player as he was. You know, but then not only on top of that, then fans turn on him at the end of his tenure with the Royals. So that kind of sucks. And you really don't want to see that with Alex Gordon. You know, I mean, we want to remember, and not that anybody's going to forget about, you know, Game 1 World Series 2015 home run in the bottom of the ninth. You know, mm-hmm. nobody's going to forget that happened. But, you know, you want that to be, you want that to be the kind of first memory and the greatest, not like not somebody to have a bad taste in their mouth and then have to be reminded of the fact that that's what he did. You know, I mean, I feel like so many times with someone like Sweeney, since we're using that example, people have to be reminded of how good he was. People have to be reminded of how many home runs he hit and what is, you know, all the different things that he did for those bad teams. So you don't want to see that with Alex Gordon. You know, there's a sentimental aspect to when you have a player like Gordon who went through so much to finally get to the point where he was a very prominent player in the league, had such a huge shining moment in that World Series. You know, he was the very, very beginning of – he was the again, Coach Haver, like you mentioned at the top of the show, kind of in that nebulous position of not technically Dayton Moore's pick, even though he was, according to the company. But, you know, Gordon was the last of the Allard Baird picks then, if you – or I guess second to last, depending on how you want to put
Hoche. He really would have been because Baird was gone at least.
So. Oh, that's true. That's a good point, yeah. So Gordon was the last of the Allard Baird picks and the kind of – One of the final, or he is really the final holdover from that regime, but someone who Dayton Moore really kind of bonded with and identified with and really, you know, knew there was a place for in this organization and kind of did everything they could to help him succeed. And he did succeed. Those are great stories. You know, those are awesome things. And it paid off. He won a World Series game for them. And essentially, we kind of talked about this, you know, with some of the guests we had after the World Series, when talking about Alex Gordon specifically, that, you know, they may not have won the World Series at all if they hadn't won that game. And so, I mean, that's how big of an impact Alex Gordon had and how so much of, you know, 2014, I mean, there was all the MVP chants and everyone was going after that. For the month of August, he basically carried the team. Which was a crucial stretch as they went towards their first playoff run there. So, I mean, you know, you don't want to see the last 2-3 years of Gordon's tenure as a Royal just be really bad and have what's been a very great Royals career marred by, you know, some unfortunate circumstances. So, I mean, if that's what happens, unfortunately that's what happens. And hopefully, you know, the Royals make the decision of when to move on, they make that when they need to and don't hold on for too long. But, you know, hopefully he can get things back on track and be a little bit better. Not a little bit better, be a lot better, but, you know, just doesn't have to be great, but, you know, just more in line with what we thought. Cause, you know, the last thing I want to do is see Alex Gordon from a Royals fan perspective, be looked on in any way negatively. Cause he's meant so much to this organization and been so great for the Royals that it's tough to see. So hopefully these last few weeks, last month or so, it's a good start for him as he kind of climbs back to where he once was.
Yeah. I mean, I think so much is made, you know, when he debuted in 2007, obviously he took him a long time to start hitting home runs and he really did struggle. But he finished that year with a pretty okay line. I mean, it wasn't great, but for a rookie, you know, with 1 year in the minor leagues, it was okay. 2008 was a better than average season. And then 2009, 2010, he got injured. There were a lot of different issues that led to him being demoted. They did, obviously, the fabled rebuilding of him with Rusty Kuntz at the helm. And he came back as an outfielder. And, you know, you weren't sure what it was going to do, but from 2011 to 2015, he was consistently one of the more valuable players in baseball through that entire stretch. And, you know, kind of culminating in that game one of the World Series, which is going to be, God, one of three most memorable Royals moments, probably. I mean, that's a huge home run. So, yeah, I'm with you. I hope that we don't have to consistently remind people, hey, Alex Gordon was really good once. Because for as much flack as Sweeney got back in the day, you know, he had so many different back issues over and over that he just missed time. And yeah, there was a lot of angst about that, which I guess I get to a point, but if you can't play, you can't play. I mean, it doesn't do anybody any good to have him playing with a bad back. So if it turns out that, you know, Alex Gordon is in that same boat, well, he makes a lot more money than Sweeney did. And even if it's still kind of, you know, relative to the league, it's still a lot of money, especially over the last 2 years of this deal where I think he makes, what, $22 million each year?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of money. A lot of money. So, yeah, I hope he gets it turned around because, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, in all of this stuff, I'm a fan, and I've always liked Alex Gordon, and he's easy to root for, and you want to see him do well, and you want to see him kind of send things off in a way that kind of befits that legacy of who he was in those years where the Royals were ascending and actually took the crown. And if he goes out on a whimper, or if, you know, one of those things where he's designated for assignment in June of 2019 or something, it'll be really disappointing. It may be a decision the Royals have to make. You know, it's not outside the realm of possibilities. But, you know, you still would like to see him, I think from a fan perspective, just, you know, have a strong two seasons on this contract and see where that puts him. I don't know if he'll be looking to retire at that stage or not, or if he'll continue to play. It's tough to see the Royals in 2 years looking to keep Alex Gordon. But, you know, it's one of those things we can worry about when it happens. But, you know, I want to see him finish his career as a Royal. I want to see him finish it well. So this means that this month is enough to kind of kickstart him back into remembering what he can be. Then great. And if it isn't, then I guess that's time. You know, that's what happens. So I don't.
Still undefeated.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, it always gets you, no matter what.
Yes. Yes, it does. And as we talk about ending a player's tenure as a Royal, let's talk about one who may be done, but may be worth not being done as a Royal, right? Huh? Think about it. Okay. But what I'm talking about here is Mike Minor. So recently recently in terms of Kelvin Herrera's struggles, because those have been going on all season, but recently Mike Minor has been thrust into more of a closer role, and he's been doing really well, and he's been thrown into more high leverage situations, and he has been performing very well. He's thrown 73 innings on the year. He's got a 2.71 ERA, so he's had a really good season for the Royals. And, you know, they when they signed him, it was, you know, it was kind of, okay, we're playing the long game here. This is going to be a very we're really looking to kind of help him back from where he's from his injuries and get him into a place where he can be really productive for this team. And he has been this season. It's been really great. And so the question is, you know, should the Royals bring back Minor? And he got his first save, let's see, the last week against Cleveland.
It was the last game the Royals won.
Yep, there you go.
And broke Cleveland's 22-game winning streak.
Yep, that's crazy. Indeed. I forgot that was the one that did it. So there was so that was pretty big. About as high leverage as they come in the regular season when
felt
you're going
like
up against
a
team.
Game.
Yes, it did. And the Royals celebrated as if it was won.
Right.
But beyond that, you know, he's also been in, you know, kind of a fireman role. He's had some multiple inning outings. He's been in very high leverage roles for this team and has done very well. He's only given up, let's see, one run in his last last 10 innings pitch. He's only given up one earned run. He's had 12 strikeouts, only 5 walks. So, I mean, he's done really well. And so the kind of proposal or thought process is, you know, you can make him the closer for the rest of this season. Don't know how much that's going to get you. He might have, you know, two, three, four more opportunities for the rest of the year. But then the question becomes, okay, do they try and hold on to Mike Minor and bring him back next season? So there's a couple of things at play here. Number one, there's a mutual option that they have, which is, I believe it's $10.25
million. It's $10 million for sure.
Yeah, I don't know about the little extra, but we'll call it $10
million. Yeah.
So that's really the big number that you need to get, you need to see. So there's right. a lot of money coming off the Royals' books next year from their $140 million payroll of this year. Unfortunately, they've still committed, no matter what, to $90 million next year, which – 5-6 years ago,
that would be
that's the biggest like Royals record, payroll yeah. in history. So, you know, on the one hand, you say, well, hey, $130-140 million the last couple of years for their payroll, they've got the money, they could pay the guy, no problem. But on the other hand, you say, okay, well, you know, before this big run they had, $90 million was according to them. Was the furthest they could go with their break even points. So obviously, that break even point has ticked up each year. Now, granted, they continued to have more and more success. They were bringing in more revenue, more people coming to the games, more people buying merchandise, things like that. So, you know, there is a cause and effect relationship there. And as a lot of these players that people were buying the jerseys for, people were attaching themselves to, may or may not be leaving in the offseason, you don't know how much that revenue is going to affect the payroll or how much it's going to affect how much they're willing to put into the payroll. But that being said, there's $10 million that if they were to pick up the mutual option, both sides, then, you know, it's only $10 million. In baseball terms, not a ton. So that's one thing to consider. Another thing to consider is we've been here before in the sense of if Mike Minor does turn into a Joaquin Soria, Greg Holland, Wade Davis type closer – or late inning guy, you know, is it worth paying the money or possibly trying to negotiate a new contract for multiple years to keep him around when who knows how competitive the Royals are going to be next year? We've seen how non-productive, I guess you could say, it is to have a really, really good top-flight closer on a losing team, right. Which is to say it's a non-starter for me. You know, so I mean, there were calls to trade Soria every year, and by the time it was too late, it was too late. They didn't get right. anything for him, and he had his second Tommy John surgery, and that was the end of that. You know, now he's back, of course, but at the time, that was kind of the end. So, you know, I think you wonder about that type of scenario, about that. Is that the situation that the Royals should put themselves in? But the third thing to consider is, of course, if the Royals know that they're probably not going to compete next year, and if they're realistic, they probably should. But if that's what they know, and they can either pick up a mutual option or work out some sort of team-friendly contract, then they can put themselves in a position where if Minor does kind of explode next year and have become a really good top-flight closer, even if the Royals aren't competitive, you know, I think at this point I'd be confident enough to say that they'd be in a position where they would flip him for the right price and hopefully mm-hmm. kind of get a few prospects to kind of replenish the system a bit and help them out moving forward. So it seems like that's the major aspects of the Mike Minor situation that the Royals really have to consider. So when you think about those things and just the situation in general, how do you feel about it? Do you want them to try and – I mean, I think they're probably going to pick up the option with the – I mean, he's yeah. 29 years old, so
yeah, they're going to pick up
– yeah, they're going to pick up their side of the option so that, you know, and give him the opportunity to say no. But he's only 29 years old, and this is probably one of the better years he's had, kind of a hot name right now. I think he'll probably try and test the markets. I doubt he picks up his option, but how aggressively should if you were the Royals, how aggressively would you pursue him? And, you know, how do you feel about that whole situation?
Yeah, I think when it comes to the mutual option, so many times that's really just a way to defer money down the line and just kick it. It's got a $1.25 million buyout if he declined his side of that option, which, you know, that's pretty nice payday for saying no. You know, he'll be 30 in December. Still, you know, he spent so much time recovering that he doesn't have a lot of miles on that arm. But at the same time, he did have labrum surgery, so that's something to consider. So I don't know. If he has a $10 million payday in front of him for 1 year, it might be something he would go for. I do figure he'll probably test the market, being young enough to do so and after having a good season. He said, I think it was a Jeffrey Flanagan article where he said he prefers to start, which is understandable. Starters generally make more money and, you know, get a little more, you know, attention. But if he could be an eighth or ninth inning guy, it's something he would go for. And I think there's certainly that opportunity in Kansas City. You know, so I kind of like that last idea of, you know, signing, trying to get him to some kind of good contract, seeing what happens. And if it turns out that, you know, you sign him for, let's say, 3 years and I don't know, $37 million or something. I don't know what the contract would be. Maybe even 3 for 30 to kind of go in line with the amount of the option.
Yeah. You know, what we've, and that was the deal that Ryan Madsen signed, who kind of followed a similar path.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a couple of years ago.
Nice recovery year and went out and showed that he can be a high leverage back end reliever. We've seen over the last couple of years where, you know, either the elite relievers are those players who have some team control with some affordability are the guys who bring in those big prospects. And so for the Royals, a team that really doesn't have anything close to a top 100 prospect, much less a top 50, if you could take him and make him a mini Andrew Miller and get somebody out of the top 50 overall prospects next July, that's not too bad. It might look weird for a team like the Royals to sign a guy to a 3 year, whatever, $1 million contract when they're rebuilding years where you don't expect to contend. But if all you're going to do is flip the guy, you know, you're really going to be paying him, what, $5 million, and you get a prospect back. So I like that idea. If that's kind of a savvy move if they were looking to do it. The other issue is they would still have to sign him. So that's one thing. You know, he'd have to believe there was an actual opportunity to close in Kansas City. But I mean, it would be something where the Royals could be sitting in July where they're, you know, not really in any kind of playoff hunt, but have the opportunity to sell off Mike Minor and Kelvin Herrera and maybe accelerate some of the rebuilding that they need to do. Or maybe they fluke out like the Twins and they're actually contending and they have two good arms in the back end of their bullpen. So I think they should try to keep him around. When you look at the rotation, you've got Duffy returning. You'll have Ian Kennedy back. You'll have Jake Junis has certainly earned a spot in the rotation. Nate Carnes should be back fully healthy. Sam Gavilio should have a shot. And you never know who else they're going to go out and say, oh, Jason Hamill will be back. So The rotation seems pretty full. So if Miner's really set on starting, then there's no way he's going to be in Kansas City because there's just not going to be an opportunity to really do that. But if he's willing to take that back end bullpen job and either take his side of the option or, you know, sign a decent deal that the Royals are happy with, then yeah, he could either give them good value on the mound or in a trade. And I think that's a good way to kind of approach it. If you're the Royals, to just see what you can get out of that. And see if you can flip Minor if you're out of it, or maybe see where you're at after 2018 and maybe 2019 in his second year on this hypothetical deal. Maybe they're a little bit better and maybe he's closing more games than you expected. So I think they should make every shot to sign him and keep him around. It might be tough to outbid him or outbid whoever might go after him. But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely worth a shot. They've certainly been in, you know, worse positions on a guy. And if they were able to turn him into somebody's top 50 prospect, that'd be great. So yeah, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely on board with that. You know, and we've talked about it in the past, you know, if more options is always a good thing. In the words of the great Marlo Stanfield, sounds like one of them good problems. You know, if the Royals are not competing next year, but they have a top flight closer, then boom, they've got a trade piece to replenish, like you said. If they do fluke out, as you mentioned, which I guess is certainly possible, you know, we've kind of talked about how if you can squint hard enough, and actually in the BP Slack chat, we've kind of talked about this too with everyone, that there's next year's team is a great supporting cast for what could be a very good team with no superstar. It's just, it's all the supporting cast. Yeah. That's so, you know,
Sal Perez kind of, and the Pips.
Exactly. That's kind of a problem. But something we could discuss later.
Yeah. But we got a whole winter for it.
Yeah. Point being, you know, similar to the Twins, like you mentioned, you know, not only this year, but a couple of years ago as well, when they had a better season. You know, it could be something where if the Royals somehow find themselves competing, then it's definitely very valuable to have a top end closer. So I guess I shouldn't say I don't see a downside, because your downside is you sign him and then he's not a top flight closer and you're not competitive and you can't trade him.
Now you're stuck.
Yeah. Now I don't think, based on Minor's track record, even despite the injuries, that he's someone who's just going to be absolutely terrible next year. Yeah. You know, and so there's a chance, you know, some likelihood that even if he's not very good, you know, you can still get some value from him, because he's going to be a guy that, especially as a reliever, can throw you a lot of innings, can do a lot of relief inning appearances. He's someone who's shown kind of in the second half of the season especially that he could be that kind of Andrew Miller role. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm pretty confident that he can be in that role. And even if he's not, you know, the next Wade Davis, you know, or the next Andrew Miller, he can be still a very good player that the Royals could maybe not flip for a top 50 prospect, but just something to kind of keep the system flush, if you will. So yeah. Who knows? I definitely think it's worth trying to go there.
Absolutely. You can always use big leaguers, and if you have a legit big leaguer, you'll find a market for them, even if they're average. You know, someone this time of year July and August, someone will find a reason to go acquire that guy. I mean, Francisco Liriano got traded with a lot of suitors, and he has not pitched very well in a while. So if you have someone like Minor throwing his kind of season this year, and if he continues to do that, yeah, he would definitely draw attention. So, you know, the Royals, unless he got hurt and just completely tanked, they probably wouldn't get stuck with any kind of contract if they wanted to get away from it. So it's they'd have opportunity to do something, I'm sure.
Yes. And, you know, we'll definitely have plenty of time to talk about that in the off season. But that's kind of all the major topics we really wanted to talk about as we wind down. So some of the things to keep an eye on. But we'll end the show the way we began. Another hearty Kansas City Baseball Vault. Congratulations. Tip of the cap.
Huzzah.
Raises the glass. Whatever you want to say to Mike Moustakas, the new single season Royals home run record holder. It's here, folks. It happened. It's live. We caught it on tape. I can't believe how fortunate we were, man. We've like literally the whole season, once it came into view, once we thought that it would happen, we were like, oh, what if it happens when we record? Like, how cool would that be? And all this kind of stuff.
I was dead certain
that it actually happened.
I figured it was going to happen immediately after we had stopped recording some of these episodes.
Oh, yeah. Last couple weeks, like, we thought that.
Like, you know, because we usually record at like, you know, 6:30 or 7 o'clock or so. On Wednesday evenings, and usually the Royals are either starting a game or they're in the middle of a game at that point. And so, like, tonight it just happened that Moose was coming up literally like 2 minutes after we started recording. And, you know, as you could hear at the beginning, thanks to the magic of editing,
yes,
you heard our reactions live and on the spot. So that's, you know, it was pretty fun.
That's pretty cool.
It didn't happen immediately after we stopped recording, which would have been silly, because then we'd have to wait a week to talk about it.
We don't. And we talked about Eric Hosmer becoming the player that we all thought he would be this season. And the same is said for Moose. You know, he was never a guy that people thought was going to be a huge batting average guy, could hit for some average, but wasn't going to be huge. But the power was supposed to be there. And we had kind of seen – he'd kind of had a weird career. That was kind of the player he started out as, and then he just tanked horribly. And then 2015, he had that breakout season. But he was kind of in the middle with all of it. Solid power, 22 home runs. He hit for a little bit of average at 284, but wasn't, you know, the 323 like Hosmer is this year. But this year is the player that he's become the player we thought he would be. 37 home runs now. A guy who's going to approach that 40 home run mark. He's hitting 271, still having a solid season. I think he sacrificed some walks a little bit for some of the power, which I'm okay with. You know, his on base percentage is not that nothing to write home about, but you know, a 523 slugging percentage. He's got 82 RBIs to go with the, well, I guess 83 now to go with his 37 home runs. So, you know, he has become the player that, as advertised. So, and we kind of jokingly, I mean, obviously Moose and Hosmer have given us a ton of great memories, so there's definitely no complaints, but you know, you wonder if this would have happened a little bit sooner, you know, when you had, you know, Bryce Harper seemed like he took a year or two because I mean, he was so young when he came up anyway. But you know, the Nationals have had him for, you know, 4 or 5 years now where he has been the player everyone thought he would be. Mike Trout seemed like it was instantaneous. He came up and he was the player everyone thought he was going to be. You know, so Moose and Haas, they kind of took a little bit to find their way, it seems, and they kind of found different pieces of it along the way, and they've finally been able to put it all together. So you wonder, you know, well, if Moose was a 35 home run guy for the last 5 years, and if Hosmer was the, you know, that kind of 25 home run, 330, 400, 500 guy his whole career with the Royals, you know, how things would have been. But, you know, you can't complain about anything that has happened the way it has because they won a World Series. It's like, how much better can it get? Well, it can't get any better than that.
Right.
I suppose they could have won more games that year, but I don't know. It doesn't really matter how many games you win.
They still won 95 and led the AL. So what do you
– Exactly. So, I mean, no, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where sometimes I think, you know, I'll think about, but no complaints from Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas as we wind down on what will be the end of the era for them, most likely. You know, they've given – you know, this year is kind of the cherry on top to a fantastic 6 years they've given this organization. So this will be our last recording, right, of the regular season? Is that what we said?
Next week will be.
Oh, next week, yes.
Yep.
No, I mean, so they'll – okay. I thought we –
they'll have about four games if we record next Wednesday as usual. So
yes, so that'll be the last in-season recording. Of course, we'll be here in the off-season every week, just as we've been for the last 5 years. Man.
Long time.
So six years. So definitely plan on that. So we'll have plenty of stuff to talk about in the off-season as we'll kind of track the free agency of all these major players that are, you know, hopefully some may end up staying. We'll see. Who knows what the Royals will end up doing. But until then, bask in the glow of a new Royals home run record. Mike Moustakas has done it. He's taken down the king, sort of, Steve Balboni. It's over. Here we are. New Royals home run record. Congratulations to Mike Moustakas. Congratulations to the Royals for finally beating down.
They did it.
One of the biggest albatrosses in all sports. Now, the next will be to finally eclipse that 40 home run mark. We thought, again, it would be Moose that would happen this year. But, you know, unfortunately, if he doesn't get to 40, at least he broke it. So we got that going for us. So it's something that I have seen in my lifetime now. And I've seen it all. Now I've seen it all as a Rose fan. So I'm thankful for that. Congratulations, Mike Moustakas. Be sure to visit our sponsor. I'm sure we'll you can go celebrate the new record at Kelly's, of course. And as always, make sure you would celebrate responsibly, please. And you can go to BP Kansas City. I'm sure we'll have plenty of discussions and posts and everything about this fantastic moment in Royals history. It truly was just awesome, and it all came together so perfectly. You know, if I could have chosen any moment to have been recording live on the podcast, that would have been the one, and here we are. I'm so excited for that. It's awesome. So much, so awesome. Okay. So with that, right. Yes, we did. So with that, so maybe everything happens for a reason. Maybe I had my car trouble and my daughter got sick and everything, and that delayed us enough to where we were recording right when it happened. So who knows, you know, some divine intervention possibly. But anyway, thank you all so much for listening. Greatly appreciate it. Couldn't do this show without you. Love you all so much. Be sure to tune in next week, our last in-season show for the Royals, the end of an era, if you will. Hopefully not not a stark end, maybe kind of an easing. We'll see. Plenty of time to discuss that. But
yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to react to all of this.
I don't either. But we'll be here for that. We'll capture all that live as well. Yep. So, or at least as live as we can. So thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tune in next week. Visit our sponsors. Go to Kelly's BP Kansas City. Until next time, thank you all so much for stopping by. We'll see you next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816. Limitosis. Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.